Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name's Barbara P. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, June 10th. Happy Monday. We're reading from the Big Book and we are at page 24, paragraph 2, which starts the almost certain consequences that follow and ends with putting his hand on a hot stove. Today's readers are Judy O. on the 12 Steps, Laurel B. on the 12 Traditions, Nancy P. will be starting us off on our text, Tamara C. will read our closing, Craig is in the wings, just in case we need help, and we'll have Karen W. as our newcomer greeter and Christine G. as our host for the second hour. So stay with us for that. The reference number for yesterday's special edition is 21472. That's 21472. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose. It's to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions. I'll now ask Judy O. to read our 12 steps.
Hi, this is Judy O., a recovered compulsive overeater from New Jersey. Thank you. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Yeah. Thanks, Judy O. Laurel B., would you read the 12 traditions for us?
Hi, this is Laurel B., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Wakanda, Illinois. The 12 traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8 Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9 OA assaults that never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10 Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11 Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12 Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me do service.
Thanks, Laurel B. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature and then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we're discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There's no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. We welcome everyone. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We're sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press *1 to unmute if you want to share. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, and then press *1 to mute your phone again. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 24, second paragraph, starting with the almost certain consequences that follow, and ending with putting his hand on a hot stove. And I will ask Nancy P., would you get us started this morning?
I will. Nancy P., recovered in West Newton, Massachusetts. The almost certain consequences that follow taking even a glass of beer do not crowd into the mind to deter us. If these thoughts occur, they are hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. There is a complete failure of the kind of defense that keeps one from putting his hand on a hot stove. So there are no almost about this work for me. I have to do, still today, 6.5 years later, everything that I learned to do in the beginning and everything I've learned to do since. And just a second, I had a cat that was picking at the carpet. So what did I learn to do in the beginning? I learned to shut up and listen, mostly. It doesn't say that in the book, but it should, or I would have needed to read it. But, you know, I've been in this program for over 50 years, and I only recovered 6.5 years ago. So I spent a lot of time, you know, looking at threadbare ideas and trying to make them work. And yesterday, I had to clean out my closet completely because we're having some work done in the house. And, you know, I put a lot of things in the Goodwill bag, and I was telling my sponsor this morning that I found a sweater that I had knit myself with very expensive wool from Scotland, and it was moth-eaten, and I just looked at it and I threw it away. I actually put it in the Goodwill bag. I probably shouldn't have done that, but you know, previous to yesterday, I would have looked at it and shaken it out and said, I could probably make that work. Well, I don't think that anymore about the way that I live my life. I don't try to make things work because everything that I tried to do to make my life work didn't work. Finally, you know, not to give away the plot, but finally I threw away things that didn't work in favor of new things, old things which didn't work in favor of new things which do. So what works for me, you know, honesty, integrity, dependability, patience, all those things. And I don't have any haze in my mind anymore. I'm completely focused on what I need to get done. And I never abuse food. I never hurt myself with food in any way, shape, or form under any circumstances. And I do everything. I travel. I go to parties. I entertain. I have people over. I go to other people's homes. I go anywhere. I do everything. And I never have a problem with food. So that's not an issue for me anymore. And I don't worry about that stuff. That's the main thing, because we know that the main problem exists in our mind. And, you know, my it says the almost certain consequences. In just a few more pages, in More About Alcoholism, it says no real alcoholic ever regains control. Inevitably, never, never, always, every single, no such thing as every form of. I mean, it's never like sort of mostly. It's always complete, total, absolute, utter. Those are my five most important words. Absolute, complete, entire, utter, and nothing. And I don't have any questions in my mind anymore. I was beaten to the ground, pounded into the mud, and then finally said, geez, there may be something wrong. And the only way that I can keep on the beam, keep on track, two things. One, spiritual wakefulness. I have to wake up and shut up, I guess. And the other thing that you've all heard me say a million times, say it with me again, surrender, surrender, surrender. There's no other way for me to keep my mind clear and open for business than that. And I listen to all the fellows on this line. I make lots of phone calls. I go to lots of other meetings. And suddenly, counterintuitively, I'm able to do every single thing every day that I learned in the beginning still. And I'm able to do every single thing that I've learned since. And I have time, extra time, to work in my garden, to sew, to knit, to be with my friends, to be with my family. My life is packed full of fantasticness and wonderfulness and amazingness. And that gift is for everybody. There is no lesser degree of membership in this program. There's only a greater or lesser degree of how much I pay attention, shut up and listen, and surrender. And with that, I'll pass.
Ah, thanks so much, Nancy P. We're going to go ahead and take a list of names, and I will go ahead, jot those down, and then we'll each take 3 minutes. Who would like to share this morning on this paragraph?
Christina J. from
Katie
North Carolina.
G. Katie G. from Boston.
Okay, got Christina J., Katie G. Who else? Anybody else in the first round? All right. Well, Christina J., kick us off, and Kate, you'll be followed by Katie, and then we'll take some more names.
Good morning, everyone. It's Christina J.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I was my name in. Kim A.
Yeah, go ahead, and I'll add you to the end of the list. What was your name? Okay. We'll get you on the next one.
Kim A.
Okay, Kim A and Harlan G. Got you both. Okay.
So sorry. Okay.
No worries. Let's go. Christina J., you're up, and then we'll come back and take more names.
Thank you. That pause gave me a minute to calm my nerves down. I'm always a nervous wreck when I get on this line. Anyway, what's going on with me today? Had something come up this morning in a phone call that pissed me off. And what I've come to know since the food is down is that I have an reaction thought, and the place is in the and my brain wants to chew on those things like they chew on food. And these things are hot stoves. I have an allergic reaction to food, and I have an allergic reaction to my character defects. And boy, I just want to keep going on them. So they're all hot stoves for me. And today I have program, of course, to work those, and I sat and did a very strong 10 step with God. And what is the solution to that allergic reaction, my thoughts? It is that God is everything or God is nothing. And I can take solace in knowing that what was not in my control, but in God's control. Now in the food, you know, if I had not paid attention to that allergic reaction to my thoughts and just kept chewing on it, sat with it, pushed it back like I always did, numbed out to it, I would have gone to work. And if I wasn't aware that this was something that could take me back to the food, you know, I'd have been really restless, irritable, discontent. If I'd have been numbed out about this, which I often do, I auto-numb pilot to many of my emotions and feelings, I would have gone to work. If there had been a box of donuts come in, you know, I would have been in it. This has happened to me one too many times, you know, with touching the hot stove. All of a sudden, the donuts come in. Now, there's no donuts in my office ever, but someone might bring a gift. Right, bring in cookies, might bring this, that, the other. Most of the time, there's nothing there. But God seems to, you know, like be teaching me through these appearances of these things that you have got to pay attention to the hot stove in your mind. It's the thinking and the eating, or the thinking and the drinking. I think, you know, as we say, it's a twofold disease. And I'm so grateful that today I can surrender that. Surrendering the emotional discomfort in my head that comes up in my gut that sucker punches me is the same as turning away from the food. Take a deep breath, do a 10 step, go to God, and surrender it. I don't have to stay with it and chew on it and chew on it and try to fix it and try to justify it and say, oh, he's wrong. You know, he is what he is. I can't change him. You know, he's a cactus on the path. You know, I can run into him and be all pissed off, or I can realize that God's teaching me something through his reaction to something I said to him. So anyway, that's what's going on with me today, and I hope that helps somebody. Thank you. I look forward to the share. Love you all.
Thanks, Christina J. from North Carolina. Katie G., you're up, followed by Kim A.
Hey, good morning, everyone. This is Katie G., and I'm recovered in Boston. You know, I have a spiritual malady, right? And I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And when I first came into the rooms of OA, I had a lot of, like, diet mentality. Like, first of all, the food plan was a diet. Secondarily, I thought that I could just think the bite through, that if I just remembered, like you hear that in the rooms, keep it green, make sure that you remember your last bite or it isn't yours. And all of these slogans are made by well-intentioned people. I don't criticize them at all. But what the big book is telling me is that there are certain consequences that are going to follow when I pick up the food, right? But I don't have denial. I hear people talking about denial. There's no word denial in the big book. I have delusional thinking. I have false psychotic belief. That's what delusion is. And, you know, if you've ever burned yourself, which I have, it hurts. It hurts so badly. And I remember that really, really clearly. And when I see a stove, I do not put my hand on it. But my alcoholic thinking, it tells me, it's like, you know what, this time it's going to be different. It's not that bad. And the problem with my disease is that it talks to me in my own voice, with my own tone of voice, with my own whatever. It just sounds like me. And this old threadbare idea that, you know what, I'm not different. The delusion that I'm like normal people has to be smashed. And I cannot, and I burn myself over and over and over again. And that is what my relapse was. And I can get this way with things in recovery. I have had, you know, struggles with the scale. I have had struggles with exercise bulimia, thinking that I can do it in a weighed and measured manner and not have to commit it. And I can fix, I can manage, and I can control my life, and I burn myself over and over again. But if you're new, I'm not telling you that it's not impossible. You know, people might say differently, but this big book tells me that the only solution we have to suggest is entire, complete abstinence. And abstinence is the action of refraining from addictive foods, addictive ingredients, and addictive behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. And I cannot keep myself from the food, but I must put it down and ask God, because with God, all things are possible. And with God, I, as our previous speaker shared, I don't have to avoid people, places, and things I can't. And God can help me through anything to abstain and get a relationship with him. And he will do it for me. And I'm going to do this again one day at a time. And with that, I pass.
Oh, thanks, Katie G. Appreciate you from Boston. Kim A., you're up next.
Thank you. Good morning. This is Kim A. from New York City. I always want to preface my shares with, this is only for me. And so this is only for me. I can't do absolutes because to me, you know, I tried to do absolutes in OA following a food plan for 18 years and couldn't do it. Couldn't avoid certain foods or ingredients, couldn't not pick up no matter what, couldn't do things that I hear work for other people. And that's great that it works for them, but it didn't work for me. Because I can't make that decision to not take that first bite. I can't make that decision to just not pick up no matter what, no matter how much I want.
Because step one teaches me that not only am I powerless over what happens after I take that first compulsive bite, but I'm also not able to manage the decision to not do that, right? So the only decision that we're asked to make is the decision in step three. And the decision in step three tells me that I need to be willing to turn my will and my life over to higher power. Well, what is that about? Like, yeah, I always wanted to, but didn't know how to do it. What it's really asking me to do is make a decision whether I'm willing to work the steps with a recovered sponsor in solid direction to learn how to turn my will and my life over to the care of a higher power. And I don't even have to have a strong belief. I don't have to have any belief in any higher power. I just have to be willing to. That's what step two says. So I've learned that my addiction to food, and it's not an addiction to like a particular ingredient. I don't need to avoid certain foods. My addiction is to food. My addiction is to stuff in my face. And that happens because of my flawed attitudes and my perceptions, which get uncovered by working the steps. And I learn how to turn that over to my higher power. Unless I'm doing that, I'm not able to not pick up no matter what. I'm not able to make a decision to not, to do my life a certain way, whatever that means. Because my thinking works a certain way, and my thinking is what causes me to live in a constant state of, like, unease, being uncomfortable, being negative and resentful and full of self-pity, because I'm basically misunderstanding the world. I think that they're doing something to me. I'm just not seeing things clearly. And I can't do that on my own. So if I can get to those causes and conditions of why I think that way, then I can learn how to turn all of those thoughts over to a higher power. And then I'm not going to have the need to touch that hot stove. I'm not going to have the need to figure out how I can touch it so it won't burn me, right? Because that's the game. The game is how to touch the stove. Do I stand on my head? Do I touch it facing north? You know, do I do it hopping on one foot on Wednesdays? Do I touch it with the top of this finger? No.
Time.
None of that is going to work, but in my delusional mind, I'm going to figure out a way. So unless I'm working the steps and learning how to rely on a higher power, I can't make any decisions when it comes to food or anything else. And I'll pass with that. This is Kim A. in New York City. Thanks.
Time.
Great.
Thanks, Kim A. Harlan G., you're up next, and then we'll be taking another list of names.
Thank you very much. I'm Harlan G. I'm from Scottsdale. I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. I'm currently in Arlington Heights, Illinois. Thank you, moderator, for the job you're doing. Thank you very much, Barbara. This paragraph and the date today tie in beautifully because the paragraph is talking about the mental blank spot, the built-in forgetter. I would be standing in front of the display of Doritos or standing in front of the display of Chips Ahoy cookies or Oreos at 400, 500, 600, 700 pounds. My stomach would be hanging down to my knees. I would be physically unable to move. I would be emotionally distraught. The cookies, the Doritos, the food had ransacked my life. They had given way to the most horrific pain that a human being could possibly suffer. I was emasculated, humiliated. I was absolutely deformed and alienated from the world that I was born into. And there I was deciding what kind of Chips Ahoy should I buy today? Because the idea that these cookies had ruined my life every single time and would ruin them further again would not enter my mind. The mental blank spot is the sidekick of the mental twist. It's part of the mental twist. And so for me, I need God's help to bring into my consciousness that this is what's killing me. This is what's destroying my life. This is what is ransacking my life. I cannot bring that thought to bear into my head on my own by myself. Now, there's something else today that we should remember. Today is June the 10th, and on this date 1935, even though that date is wrong. Bill and Bob both got the date wrong. It was actually June the 17th. If you look at the AMA convention in Atlantic City for 1935, it didn't end with the 10th. It started on the 10th. But that aside, there are hundreds and hundreds of people who gave their lives so we could be sitting here this morning. This is AA Founders Day. Throughout the world, there are people who both died sober and who died drunk so we could be here today. And Silkworth, excuse me, Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob, that's the tip of the iceberg. That's the tip of the iceberg. There were hundreds of others who made it possible for us to be here today so that we could recover together and have a way of life that we could absolutely, on which we could absolutely rely, and we should remember them today. Today is AA Founders Day, and without these people and without God, we wouldn't be here today. What brought upon the earth so that we could recover today and not die in the food is nothing short of hundreds and hundreds of miracles coming together. And with that, I will pass. Thank you so much for allowing me to share. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Harlan G., and thanks for the reminder on Founders Day. Who else? Let me just repeat where we are first. And so we are on page 24, second paragraph, starting with, the almost certain consequences that follow, and then ending with putting his hand on a hot stove. And if you have spoken in the last couple of days, if you would stand back, give others a chance to share. But if not, step right up. And if you haven't shared, you are welcome to. We love new voices. So who would like to share?
This is Diane
Tony
M.
B.
Okay, I heard Annette Diane L. M.
Tony
I heard Annette. Tony, gotcha, Tony B.
Nicole S.
Nicole.
Loretta H.
Loretta, gotcha. Here's who I do have. Let me make sure, just in case anybody's buried in there. Diane, Annette, Tony B, and Nicole S, Loretta H.
Deborah LT, Naples, Florida.
Gotcha. Deborah LT. Okay. Well, let's stop there, and then we'll still have time for a couple more. So keep thinking if you'd like to share. Diane M, you're up for 3 minutes, followed by Annette F.
Good morning. Thank you so much. I'm just so glad to be on a meeting. I went to, I'm a compulsive, recovered compulsive eater in Martha's Vineyard. I just got back from a little trip off island, and I was dealing with my abstinence away from home for the first time in this particular recovery. And it was challenging in this paragraph here. If these thoughts occur, they're hazy and readily supplanted with the old threadbare idea that this time we shall handle ourselves like other people. And it was just so subtle. I really had to do a lot of, I don't want to say negotiating, but the people that I was with, they were always very concerned. Can we eat that? Can you eat that? Can you eat that? Can we go here? Can we do this? Can, you know, and it started to really annoy me, even though it was very lovely and people were very concerned. And I was just getting like frustrated because I was feeling like I was being a giant pain, you know, and I was the one that had to be considered all the time. And, you know, I made a call to my sponsor because I felt like that was one of those sneaky old threadbare ideas worming their way in, like, you're a giant pain, don't do this, don't do that, why don't you just do what you always do and then end up where you always end up, which I don't want to go there today. And so I called my sponsor, and my sponsor just said, Diane, you're not like other people. And I don't know why I needed, like, I don't remember that, or I couldn't remember that, but it was just good to have somebody else just clearly say, you're not like other people. And I just relaxed into it. I'm not like other people when it comes to food, that I have almost certain consequences that if something crowds into my mind, I know exactly where that goes. So I'm just grateful to be on this line and to be in a program of recovery that supports the fact that I'm not like other people and that I don't have to go there again and have those consequences. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks. Diane M. from Martha's Vineyard. Annette F., please go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Good morning. Am I heard?
You are.
Okay. This is Annette F. I'm in Florida, and I am definitely a compulsive overeater. And I love this paragraph because I heated with a pretty good-sized wood stove for about 15 years. And you touch that sucker, and you're hurting for a while. And that's what the food can do to me when I am in the mindset of it's going to make me feel better. And it never does. And my first sponsor introduced me to a concept that I wasn't truly aware of, and that was shut up and listen. You know, I've been in the program for many, many years. I knew a lot about the big book, my old big book, God is my higher power, and my old big book had underlines and markings and highlights everywhere, and then I couldn't find it. And it was like I had to start new, and I didn't like that idea. But that was the whole idea. Being in this program this time around is like starting a new episode. And I'm looking at probably a year and a half now, of shut up and listen. And the more I listened, the less I needed to turn to the food. And I am like everybody else in this program. And that gives me peace. I'm not like other people outside of this program. A lot of people don't get me. I mean, I have a whole professional group that get me, but not personally. You know, I don't have friends that never left the buffet table. You know, I found a way to talk to people right next to the buffet table. I don't do that anymore. And I'm grateful for shut up and listen, because the more I listened, the better I got emotionally, physically, and was able to turn my life and my will over to the care of God. I have a difficult situation right now. My husband's sick. That's no fun. And there's a great deal of opportunity to feel sorry for myself and go to the food. And the other day, I was really upset. And my mind was just like, what can I eat? What can I eat? I wanted to eat everything, and I ate nothing. I made a phone call. I took my own advice. I made a phone call. And even the ones that didn't answer helped, because I was taking the action that I should be taking, or reaching out for somebody in this program and not the food. So I am forever grateful for the opportunity to serve in this program. And I have no anonymity when it comes to me being an Overeaters Anonymous. You know, people look at me and go, you? I go, yeah, me. Thank you. So with that, I am grateful for my recovery one day at a time. And I pass.
Thank you, Annette F. Appreciate you. Tony B., you are up next, followed by Nicole S. Anybody just joining us, we're on page 24, second paragraph. So Tony B., go right ahead.
Thanks very much, Barbara. My name is Tony B., and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in Scotland. Oh, I'm so grateful to be on this line, and happy birthday, AA. I guess it's 89. It's good to be on today, and good to have heard the shares so far. This is a really important paragraph. This, you know, I cannot, I have to understand that I have an allergy of the body and an obsession of the mind. And this paragraph is about the obsession of the mind. You know, personally, I had to put the food down. I could not work the steps in the food. And I was thinking about this hot stove. For me, I have celiac disease. I cannot eat gluten. It made me very sick. I had a year before I was diagnosed, my digestive tract, the villi, which make all the surface area, were destroyed by the gluten. So food went right through me, horrible diarrhea, bout after bout. I got blind spots in my eyes from malnutrition. Nothing was being digested properly. I'm not going to eat gluten again. That was a horrible, horrible experience for that year. So, you know, there are foods that I can get right enough, the gluten-free ones, crisps, pastries, bread, all of it. And I deserved all of it. And because I had that, I didn't want to put any of the rest of it down. But it could be any intolerance that you have, any allergy that you have that we're speaking about here. Or, you know, they use this hot stove. It hurts. It hurts. And I'm not going to do it. And it's such an important element. You know, and it's these two elements coming together that really give us our answer, you know, the allergy of the body and this obsession. I have no choice. At certain times, it's hazy. It's not clear. I can't really see it. And it's threadbare. You know, it's been used and used and used and used, this idea that I can eat like a normal person. And I finally have to say, I cannot eat like a normal person. Then I worked with a sponsor from Vision for You. She was great. You know, I knew what I had to put down. I knew what they were, but she worked with me. She helped me to put them down, and I was prepared to, and I did. And then I worked the steps through, and then I began to work with others. And anybody can do this. Just don't go on. If you're new on the line, don't go on and on as long as I did. You know, you can get recovery, get yourself a sponsor, put the food down, work the steps, work with others, and you can have a new and wonderful life. It's not always wonderful. You know, there's character defects. I'm kind of powerless over them too, but I'm, you know, I can work it. I can work it. So with that, I'll share the time. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Tony B. from Scotland. Nicole S., you are up. You'll be followed by Loretta H.
Hi, this is Nicole S., a recovered compulsive overeater from Colorado. Thank you for your service today. I have a memory of putting my hand on a hot stove when I was in eighth grade in my home ec class. Someone had left the burner on all night, and it was those burners, the old ones that have the rings on it. And I actually had an imprint in my hand. It really, really hurt. And believe me, I will never put my hand on the hot stove again, because that memory is seared in my brain forever. But when it came to myself over and over and over, and, you know, it was always, you know, next time I'll do better. I'll just have one next time. And, you know, those certain consequences that followed for me, binging and purging, and It took 30 hours, I timed it one time, to start feeling better physically from binging and purging, and not even, you know, to mention the just mental anguish, and, you know, that I was a failure, and I did it again. But all that was just those threadbare ideas that I could never remember, you know, don't do it, danger. It was broken. And I'm so grateful for this program, because I have steps and I have tools and I have a way of life that, even though my mind is going to forget and want to go back to, you know, food for comfort, I have a better way that's just so much better. And, you know, there's people I can call. There's a fellowship. There's so many meetings nowadays. I can just stay in the steps and stay in the program. So I'm just incredibly grateful for this program. And that's all I have. Thank you for letting me share.
Well, that's great. Nicole S., thank you so much. Loretta H., you're up. And you'll be followed by Deborah L.T. And then for those who might be thinking about sharing, we'll be taking some names after Deborah. So feel free. We'll have a few more minutes.
Thank you, Barbara, and thank you all along with my precious God. You are saving my life. And thank you, Bill W. and Dr. Bob and all the founders of this divine program. I looked up the word threadbare. So it, and this is me in a nutshell, it says it comes thin and tattered. And that's how I came into the rooms. I have the other part of the disease, but I'll die, and I know I am a compulsive overeater because I will die of this disease. I never died of the thin and tattered person because I continued, and I love the way Bill writes. He loves to talk about fire, you know, firing line, hot stove, recoiling, burn the idea. So, and this is what the disease does, but then it also can do it, the paradoxes of this disease, you know, and become, knowing today that I'm not on a diet. I lived on a diet for 54 years. Today I'm 77. And the word diet has the word die in it. I should have had a V8, you know, instead of really always deciding that I was going to be on a diet. And as everybody, I have a spiritual malady. It's not about the food. I don't even know how to eat. That's why my first sponsor was a nutritionist. I don't tell anybody how to eat because I don't know how to do that. But I do share my experience, strength, and hope where I can be on the firing line, where I have recovered from this state of mind and body. And it is for me, state of mind and body. Physically, I love to starve. I don't do that because I surrender. Seriously understanding real recovery entails not debating any reason. I stop the debating society. So today I have a system, a God's position system, that puts me in a choice that doesn't burn me. And that's by working these steps. That's by working with others. You know, the paradoxes of we die to live, we give it away to keep, we suffer to get well. We just, it's everything in this book is a paradox. And I also, as a sponsor, I don't even use that word because they never use that word. I use share partner, guide, or protege because I'm on equal footing with all of you guys. I have no degree in anything but that I know God today and I know peace. And because of that, I can live happy, joyous, and free. And with that, I pass. Happy Founders Day. Happy destiny. Happy everything because we are in a divine spiritual source. We have a divine spiritual source. I pass. Thank you, Barbara.
Thanks, Loretta. Loretta H. And Deborah LT, you're up for 3 minutes, and then we'll take another list of names.
Good morning. This is Deborah LT from Naples, Florida. When I first announced on A Vision for You, I announced as Deborah T, but I found out there is another Deborah T in Florida, so now I'm Deborah LT. Thank you very much for your service and for everyone who shared today. Today is 3 weeks of my new abstinence with A Vision for You and a wonderful sponsor, and I'm doing step 5 this afternoon. So this paragraph reminds me of where I just came from, and one of the things that drove me crazy about my former, just recent life is that when I started thinking about a binge food, and I only had a couple, I could not remember why I didn't want to clear my shelf in the pantry by sending all of its contents down my throat. In that moment, I could not remember that I felt awful about the way I look, the way I feel, my physical discomfort that I experienced as I kind of waddled through life, and the social anxiety that kept me pinned to a life of loneliness. It's a really bad thing to forget, but I always forgot. I think this is what the big book calls the allergy of the body and the obsession of the mind. I could not stop once I started, and I couldn't stop myself from starting. The decision to stop And all the reasons why I needed to stop, have to stop, must stop or I'll die, were not available to me once I began to have that mental obsession. I couldn't remember what my doctor told me about needing to lose weight or my husband begged me to lose weight. I couldn't remember anything. Nothing on earth seemed to be able to prevent me from having that mental obsession where this one food was concerned. So I seemed to be powerless against that urge to start eating it. And I was definitely powerless once I started eating it. And I forgot why I was even in the world in the first place. I was just kind of lost in the food. Of course, once I stopped eating the food, got finished with the bag, I remembered in glorious technicolor why I didn't want to eat that particular food. So in addition to being hungover from my binge eating, gaining weight, being bloated and unmotivated, shamed and afraid, I would then recall with perfect clarity all the reasons why I should not have ever eaten that food again and the promises I had made myself that this time it was for real. I was really going to give it up. This perfect clarity would have been really welcome as a deterrent, but instead it was only available to me as an intensifier to every horrible thing that being overweight brings to my life. So this is what I think of as my problem as a compulsive eater. I create the conditions around which I will tell myself strange things, which will allow me to eat, and once I eat, the physical allergy of the body takes over, and I don't want to stop, Same. No matter what. And with that, I will pass. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much, Deborah LT from Naples, Florida. So we have time for probably three more shares. Who else would like to share?
Penny C.
Penny, got
Larry
it.
K.
Larry. Anybody else?
Tamara C. Tamara C.
Tamara. Yep, got you, Tamara. Okay, so let's go there. We'll get right to it. Penny C., you're up, followed by Larry K.
Okay, thank you so much. Good morning, everybody. My name is Penny C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from the Boston area. You know, when we share, we're told to tell what it was like, what happened, and what we're like now. This paragraph describes exactly in very, very well what I was like. So that's my what I was like. What happened was God led me to Overeaters Anonymous. And the very first day I was there, it was a spiritual awakening, what I consider a real miracle, that I heard the message. And so what I'm like now, well, I just want to say that I have an app on my iPad called the Toolkit, and it tells me that I've been abstinent by the grace of God and by this miracle 13,515 days, which translates into 37 years today. You know, I my family doesn't see the miracle or the excitement that I have, and the only people I can share it with that will understand is all people like all of you. That no longer am I tied or fettered to the food. It's just, I'm speechless. And when Holland talked about, you know, this being Founders Day, I found out shortly after I came that Dr. Bob, they celebrate Dr. Bob's first day of continued sobriety the same day that I can celebrate with all of you, my first day of abstinence, and only by the grace of God. Oh my gosh! So I just wanted to thank everybody on this line because I've been coming since day one, just about every single day, and I just the hope that I hope my story gives other people is what I'm praying for. So, again, thank you. Thank you to the folks that started this meeting and to all the people that I've met and talked to and prayed with. That's amazing. So thank you for letting me share, and God bless.
Oh, thanks, Penny C, and congratulations, 37 years. Let's see, Larry K, you're up, and you will be followed by Tamara C, and Tamara will probably be closing us out.
Hey, Barbara, good morning. Thanks for your service. This is Larry K, recovered compulsive overeater. Wow, Penny, one of my great teachers. Congratulations on that. You know, as we read this paragraph, yeah, the primary thing has been mentioned is the mental blank spot. And I'm reminded that the mental blank spot can trigger, you know, both relapse for us, for those that are recovered, but also prolapse. You know, what's prolapse? Well, that's the replacement of one addiction or compulsion with another, even if that replacement behavior is seemingly adaptive. You know, and I certainly know that all too well. You know, for me, when I look at this, the task before us is not just recovery when I read this paragraph, but it's conscious recovery, right? We're bringing into consciousness by working these steps, the mental blank spot is removed. It's eradicated. Once we've implemented the steps, we're set out on a pathway in alignment with God, the God of our understanding, and that mental blank spot is lifted. So abstinence is not the goal for me. Really, for me, the goal is self-love. And because after all, how can I be of true service to you if there's still some degree of self-hatred, which I'm not even conscious of, but comes out, you can see it and hear it. You can hear the self-loathing because I spew on you out of my own self-hatred, you know? And if there's still self-hatred, which keeps me imprisoned by my own shame, you know, then that's what you're gonna see that. You're gonna hear that. I can't keep that hidden from you. So the steps help us to explore what we can't see about ourselves, things that are often hidden. And you know who makes that possible? God does, with the cooperation of us, you know, working this way of life. And I'm reminded that for me, conscious recovery entails much more than just not doing. In fact, it involves maybe the opposite in some sense. It involves maintaining an awareness of ourselves and our surroundings. It's a degree of mindfulness, and it means being staying in the present moment. And the mental blank spot, you know, that's like a hidden trap door in the mind. It leads to a sort of a dim room of forgetfulness and uncertainty. It's like a fog. The mental blank spot for me felt like a fog that descended upon my mind. It obscured, it got in the way of clear thinking and memories, and it created a sense of disorientation and confusion. See, the steps allow us to move from that sense of confusion and disorientation to a sense of conscious awareness. That's why we say we move from a self-centered existence to a God-centered existence. I need a change of heart. I need a reframing of my consciousness, and as a result of that, my activities change, because all action is born in thought. If these steps allow me to change my thinking, God changes my thinking, my actions will certainly follow. This is an inward change. Thanks so much, Barbara. It's an inward change. It's a seismic, revolutionary shift in my perspective. With that, I pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Larry K. And you will be, we're going to close out with Tamara C. And Tamara, I'm sorry, we just have like a minute and a half. I calculated a little wrong. Would you like to take that, or you want to wait till the next hour?
Yeah, I'll take it. Just let me know.
All right.
Okay, thank you. Thanks, Barbara. Thank you for moderating. I appreciate you. This is Tamara C., grateful to be recovered compulsive overeater living in Missouri. I'm just really glad that this chapter is called There Is a Solution, and that it's the top of every page I turn, because it's describing this problem that just feels impossible. And I can't stop myself from taking that first bite that sets the terrible cycle in motion again. Well, then I'm doomed.
And so I can go up and say, okay, but there's a solution coming. For me, the almost certain consequences are at first oblivion, like oblivion from my pain. And then the consequence that follows that is the remorse, the horror, the hopelessness, the fear, the terror. And so my blank spot is this. I think that if I could just eat that, it would feel so good. It would be so satisfying. I'm trying to get a certain feeling. And what doesn't deter me from that first bite, if I'm not in the solution, is the truth that there is no satisfaction in the food for me. I used to hear one bite is too many and a million bites is not enough, and that's very true for me. I never reach that feeling of wholeness, of well-being. I just end up in this ever-increasing dissatisfaction and pain. And that's the truth that doesn't come into my mind when I'm not recovered, when I'm not in the solution. I think, it would feel so good. And I forget that it doesn't. It doesn't. It's miserable. It's miserable. So now I'm learning to seek a satisfying life and wholeness in a way of living that really works in the solution of the steps. And I'll pass with that. Thank you.
Thanks for closing us out, Tamara C. And thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. Today's share ID for today's 7 a.m. meeting is 21473. 21473 for today, June 10th. We'll now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Let's see, who's taking us out? Tamara, will you please read that prayer for us? Or please read that reading for us? Our book is meant to be suggestive only and until keep you until then.
Yes. Still Tamara C. and covered in Missouri. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you